This is a recording by ISIS International from the 55th session of the UN Commission on the Status of Women held in New York from February 22nd to March 4th, 2011. ISIS International, documenting feminist visions, creating critical communications, and strengthening social movements.
So it's a great pleasure to be here with you all today. As Leonie Ruth said, what I'm going to talk about is not so much on the education, but the transition of young women from education into work. So that might also be vocational education as well. And in particular, I want to drill down today on a couple of things that young women are talking to me about as I travel around our country. And that's particularly the issue of sexual harassment in our workplace, because it's a big issue in Australia. And the other thing is the role of technology, both as a new frontier for violence against women, but also as a force for good, and how we might come together for collective action using the internet and using social media. So they're the things that I'm going to talk about in my 15 minutes. Just to give you a few stats, for those of you who are not from Australia, if you look at it overall, and I have to say this is putting aside some of the issues for Indigenous women and migrant women, but overall, Australia does very well on women's education, particularly in primary and secondary education. So the World Economic Forum, who does their gender gap analysis, has Australia as number one in the world, together with Finland and some other countries on women's education. But the real issue is that it doesn't translate necessarily into success for women in the workplace. And in fact, we've gone to a situation where the Global Gender Gap Report in 2010 showed Australia to be 24th in the world for economic participation and opportunity for women. So from being number one on education, we're back down at 24. And I think that speaks to the fact that education itself is just not enough. We're behind Canada, New Zealand, the USA, Norway, Sweden, Lesotho, Mozambique, Philippines and Mongolia, among others. So, we've got some work to do there. And when I look at one of the main reasons for that, there's no question that significant discrimination still exists in Australian workplaces, and that discrimination impacts on young women as they transition from education into paid work. Now, as we'll all know, most of the discrimination that exists today, particularly in Australia, it's not overt, it's built into the cultures, the institutions. It's as I think Aviva Wittenberg Cox, the noted US commentator, she calls it gender asbestos. It's toxic and it's hard to pin down and identify, and that's actually where we're at in Australia, I think. So the thing is, many young women come through school and they're taught that women can do anything in our country. I mean, you may know that we've got our first female prime minister, so it's almost like no public office is actually out of reach for Australian women. And we instill in young women this belief that the world is theirs for the taking and that everything is achievable by women today. And look, that's got to be a great thing. Having an expectation, a positive expectation, is part of actually achieving. But I think that we have to also be realistic about some of the obstacles that young women will face in making that transition. And I just want to give you a quick story about a young woman who's been working in my team. She came to me on secondment from one of the large law firms in Sydney. She had a law degree from Sydney Uni. She had a job in a top city law firm. And she's a very confident woman, and she's looking forward to starting her fabulous new career. But it was interesting to see her transformation over the months that she actually worked with us. Because she began to realise that during her schooling and university education, and in her previous workplaces, that there wasn't really much discussion about gender equality issues. It was just an assumption that everything was equal for men and women, boys and girls in Australia. And, sure, young women are encouraged to aim high, but without the knowledge about what it means, particularly to compete in a male-dominated environment, these things start to come up against you and you're less able to deal with it, I think, because being forewarned is forearmed. What she started to realise from working here, she started to look at the male lawyers who had started at the same time as her and were most likely earning more than her for doing exactly the same work. And it was so fascinating because I went into this law firm and I ran a focus group for male and female lawyers. And I had two who were exactly at the same level in the same group, and we talked about pay equity. And the woman said to me, she said, "Oh, look, Liz, what I do is I go into my salary negotiations and I say, it's been a really tough year, but you know, I've done this, this, and this, and this, but I just want what's fair." And the guy who's sitting beside us saying, "Are you kidding? You do that? I went in last year. I said, look, the market is hot in New York. If you don't pay me an extra 30%, I am so out of here." So it was a great stark example of different negotiations and some of the issues around pay equity. And Kate, who's the lawyer who worked with me, she started to realise that actually for every dollar she was earning, every dollar her male counterpart was earning, she was probably earning 83 cents. That's the pay gap in Australia. And then the next thing she started to realise that she could be subjected to sexual harassment. One in four women will experience sexual harassment in their lifetime. Yes, there's a small amount of sexual harassment for men, but it's around about 5 or 4%. She also started to realise that once she started a family, she'd want to take some time out and she'd be doing the important work of caring for the next generation of Australians. But the trouble is when she comes to get back in, the time out would impact negatively on her ability to re-engage in paid work, and we see it all across Australia, women de-skilling. So she comes out at this level and she comes back in at that level, and similarly her salary is often much lower. And then of course in Australia we've got the issue of finding affordable childcare, because childcare is still very expensive. She thought she'd like to work part-time. Australia has I think when you look at OECD countries, we've got one of the highest rates of flexible work in the OECD. But it's often not that senior work. It's casual, low-paid, flexible work. So she realised that if she came back full-time, her chances of reaching partnership would be very, very small. And in fact, 68% of graduates from law schools across Australia are female, 68%. And if I look at equity partners, 16% of partners of law firm are female. So there's a huge wastage of female talent in our country. And then the final thing she recognised, and this I think is the final indignity, is that after caring for the next generation of Australians, being engaged in paid work and whatever, she'd finish up in retirement with 50% of retirement savings of men. Why? Because she's been in and out of paid work, because she's chosen to care. And we've started reframing this issue as, is poverty to be the reward for a lifetime spent caring? Because that's where many women in our country are at. So she's, despite starting with all the same level of intelligence, commitment, education, she ends up in a very different place. And why is that? It's because she's a woman. So just to spend a few minutes looking at sexual harassment, I remember when I was travelling, when I first came into my role, which was about 3.5 years ago now, I travelled the length and breadth of Australia and I spoke to many young women, and I ran a young women's focus group with about 14 women under the age of 23. Now they're in their first or second jobs. We talked about a whole lot of things, women's economic empowerment and whatever, but the real issue they wanted to hone in on was sexual harassment. And of that group of 14, at least half of them described an incident of sexual harassment to me in either their first or second jobs. Only one brought a complaint, the rest of them just picked up their bags and went to another job. And I think it was when one of the young women, she said to me, "Look, I know if my uncle does it, it's not right. But you know, if it's my boss or my manager, well, maybe that's just the way the workplace is and I have to start to get used to that," which I just thought was, you know, being a mum of a young daughter as well, just such a desperately unacceptable situation. And I think the fact is that women do feel powerless, and our research speaks to that. We do a prevalence survey every 4 years, and as I said, the prevalence one in four, but what we found in our last survey is that the number of women who are bringing complaints is dropping. So only 16% of those people who are sexually harassed actually bring any form of complaint, formal or informal. Now the good news is we've had a huge high profile case in Australia over the last few months, as it was reported in the press that, you know, often when women say, "Well, what should I do if I'm being sexually harassed?" the manager says, "Well, just tell him no." So she did, with a $37 million lawsuit. And the thing about that was that it put this issue on the nation's agenda. Boards, senior executives all around the country started to engage and say, oh my gosh, is that something that could be happening in our company? So there is hopefully some good news there. I just want to tell you just one other story from listening to her. This is what a young woman, Stephanie, she worked in a supermarket in rural Australia. This is what she told me. She said, they changed the uniform. This is in the supermarket, and it was literally see-through. You could tell it was see-through, but all the girls had to wear it. In winter, I'd wear a skivvy underneath it. I get told to take it off. And when you're at school sometimes, you're dumb as, and you wear a lacy bra under your school uniform because that's what you do. And so then when you get to work and you're like, oh no, you're there in a see-through top and lacy bra scanning things. We complained about it and we were told to take off the singlets underneath. All the men were older and all the girls were between 15 and 18. When nothing came of the complaints, I just wore the top. And then I got a job in government, so I just left. And I mean, it speaks to some of the issues and the powerlessness of people to actually change that situation. So I just want to finish by making a few comments about technology. I mean, one of the things I've noticed in the last couple of years is the role technology plays as a new frontier, particularly for sexual harassment and other forms of violence against women. And we're seeing more and more violence through texting, sexting, mobile phones, social networking sites, internet chat rooms, and new forms of violence against women. And it's often the case that the users of technology are not even aware that this constitutes violence against women and that we actually have laws to deal with this in Australia. And I remember being struck by a comment from a man that I spoke to recently. He said to me that he thought showing graphic images on phones doesn't constitute sexual harassment because everyone doesn't have to look at it. So he said, there are always guys showing each other stuff on their phones. Happens all the time at lunch. Doesn't affect anyone. If you don't want to look at it, then don't look at it. The phone is more discreet than women on the wall, was his solution. And what disturbed me about the comment was the level of acceptance that existed in this workplace about a culture that tolerates that type of behaviour. There are examples of where technology has been used to perpetrate violence, but I think the other thing we need to look at, and we love them actually, because when they come in to be conciliated at the Commission, it's always an open and shut case. Ordinarily, we're looking at oral evidence of this and that, but when we've got actually either emails, texts, whatever, we can just put that and say, well, is that what you wrote? From an evidentiary perspective, we've made a step forward. I think the other thing is, though, when we look at the internet, we're always talking about how the negative things in Facebook, and I do it because I'm a mum with two young teenagers and I'm stalking them on Facebook all the time to see what they're putting up there. But I think we can use the internet and social media as a force for good. And I was really heartened recently by hearing examples of how both men and women were actually doing this. And I spoke at International Women's Day last year and I said, look, what's to stop us harnessing the technology that's already a part of our lives and using it to inspire and activate women across generations and cultures, across cities and states, across schools, communities and workplaces? Because I think globalisation, together with technology, offers us new and exciting ways of communicating with one another, and that social networking websites and communities provide us with opportunities to actually debate women's issues and to organise movements for change locally and globally. And one of the good examples of that was a campaign against Facebook's discriminatory policies when they were asking women to take off any photos that they had of breastfeeding. In 2008, women staged a virtual protest against that policy of removing photos of women breastfeeding. And within, I think, one evening, they'd got 11,000 people participating in that campaign. And the Facebook group, which spearheaded the campaign, now has over 250,000 members. So women and men are coming together around particular issues. And that's why I think the technology is really good. It's an issues-based mechanism. And we see in Australia that the feminist blogosphere is the new front line in the feminist activism. And, you know, fantastic to young women for actually taking the issues and the challenges of feminism up through the internet. But I think one of the other things about the internet And it's a thing that Joanna Blakely, who's a noted Australian author and social researcher, she believes that social media will break down gender stereotypes, as in the virtual world, gender doesn't matter. We often don't know who we're communicating with in terms of their gender, but it's really the shared interests which make a community. And I think that's such a valid point. What we don't want to do is take the divides that we have and just transport them into the virtual world. So these shared interests can be harnessed to enable people to take action, not only to end things like violence against women, but to achieve gender equality in all spheres. But as I look around the world today, I am very confident that our future is in strong and innovative hands. So thank you very much.
This speech was brought to you by ISIS International. For more audio reports, please visit the ISIS website at www.isisinternational.org.